Shalom, everybody, and welcome to the Yishai Fleisher Show, broadcasting live from Judea to the world. You're a part of it wherever you are. Shalom, and welcome to the Land of Israel Network, and shalom, and welcome to one of my favorite Torah portions, and one that has a lot to do with my life today, which is Chaye Sarah, the life of Sarah. And the life of Sarah is about the death of Sarah, or at least the beginning of it is about the death of Sarah, but the rest is really about her legacy. So this is really about Sarah's legacy. And Sarah's legacy is twin. There's two of them, and they're both in this week's Torah portion. And one is the birth of Rebecca, which we learned about at the end of last week's Torah portion. And basically, there's going to be continuation. There's going to be Jewish continuity. And Sarah is going to kind of pass away. But that's because in this week's Torah portion, she passes away in the beginning. And then at the end of the Torah portion, Isaac is going to marry Rebecca. Actually, let me say that again, which is more correctly like this. First, Sarah dies, but the minute Sarah dies, and then there's the purchase of the tomb of the matriarchs. Let's call it that for this week's show, the tomb of the matriarchs and patriarchs. Once that's done, Abraham is going to command his servant to get a wife for his son Yitzchak. We need that Jewish continuity, right? No, we don't need if not now fighting against Jewish continuity. We need real Jewish continuity. And the servant is going to go out there and he's going to find Rebecca in one of the most romantic stories in the whole Torah portion. And really, that's another theme, which is there is a romance. There's an unbelievable romance in this week's Torah portion, both between Abraham and Sarah and Isaac and Rebecca. And basically, Rebecca is going to fill that void for Isaac, that is, his mom is gone. But at the same time, the Torah will tell us that he loves her, that he loves her. So those are the themes. The themes are the purchase of the Ma'at Machpelah, and then Rebecca brought to Isaac in a kind of redux of the Garden of Eden, right? A redux of the Garden of Eden, and that's what it is. It's that Isaac is there in the garden, in the field, it says. He's praying in the field. And then Rebecca is brought towards him, and she's brought into his tent, and he connects with her, just like it tells us that, like, man was lonely until God made Eve and brought her to him, and then he was, you know, he was his soul was satisfied, his neshama was with the right person, with his intended mate, and there was completion, there was composure, And I think that there's a redux here. And of course, the other connection between Adam and Eve and Isaac is that really Isaac is praying in the field where Adam and Eve are buried. And he never leaves the land of Israel, which is the Garden of Eden. Isaac does not. So there are really deep themes here. And let us go together a little bit through the text. There are some amazing it's an amazing Torah portion. And now, wait, I have to take a pause for a second. If I sound a tad jumbled or disjointed, it's not because I'm not prepared or I don't know what I'm talking about at all. What the issue is that, as in with every year, this Torah portion, now that I work for the Jewish community of Hebron, this Torah portion is our crazy week and really our crazy months in preparation. And I want to give kudos to the Director General of the Jewish Community, Uri Karzin, and to the Director of the Hebron Fund, Rabbi Dan Rosenstein, and Ashi Horowitz, our can-do-it-all action guy, who just gets everything printed and put up, including the Chabad tent, which has going to be feeding 5,000 people this Shabbat, and the general number is about 30,000 people that are coming to Hebron and Kiryat Arba over this weekend. We have tons of VIPs, tons of people coming, and some number close to a tenth of the Knesset. I don't know if we'll have 12 Knesset members there, but we'll have about 7, 8, 9, or 10. The numbers keep changing, certainly former Knesset members as well. So we have a huge amount of representation from the State of Israel, and also the defense minister just tweeted out minutes ago that we're going to continue to build more in Hebron, like we haven't built in a long time, and he's trying to get a few political points with the folks that are coming to Ma'at Machpelah, and I think that's a good thing. People who are coming to Hebron for Chaye Sarah. So this is a big deal. We also have a lot of people coming from outside of the land of Israel, and maybe next year, maybe you're coming this year, or maybe next year you'll show up and join us. So for me personally, this is like everything happens over this Torah portion, and I have not been sleeping well this week, and it's been just a nerve-wracking week with lots of little details, and I'm not even, by any stretch of the imagination, the guy who's working the hardest about it. So there's a lot of effort to make this massive event happen, and it's all centered around the simple, maybe not so simple. It's all centered around this Torah portion, which has in it the theme of the purchase of the first property in the land of Israel and the eternal Jewish continuity. If we're the eternal nation, that's only going to happen through eternal continuity. And Hebron, the sister city of Yerushalayim, the second holiest site to the Jewish people, it's really because it's about Jewish continuity and the path that's laid out for us by the forefathers and mothers. So let's get to the text, shall we? Friends, see, this is what I was saying. If I seem a tad disjointed, it's because just a little overworked, and this is just like such a giant event that really haven't had time to do the same kind of work that I would do usually for the show. I couldn't get out to Yerushalayim to see Rabbi Mike, etc. Just too many things were going on. But look at it the other way, friends, which is the show must go on because the Torah goes on. And you know what? You know why the show must go on? Because you're important. Because you're important to me, and you're important to the story, and you got to know the story. And if I can be a small part in helping you be part of that, then that is it's my lucky day. And thank Hashem. Okay, let's go to verse number one, and I want to do the first kind of chapter verse by verse with you. The life of Sarah was 100 years and 20 years and 7 years were the years of the life of Sarah. And notice that we're going to talk about her death in the next verse, but we've in two times does it say the life of Sarah, Chaye Sarah. And you know that word Chai, being alive, right? It's a word that also God says about himself, right? He says, I'm alive. There's something very, very precious about that, and I think that's a thought that we should always, keep in our mind, that life itself is the greatest gift. It might sound trite, but it's true. And the life of Sarah here is going to be, the life of Sarah is recounted, and yet the most important thing in her life is the birth of Isaac. And so this Torah portion is also about the continuation of Isaac. And then it says, V'tamat Sarah b'Kiryat Arba. Sarah passed away, she died, in Kiryat Arba. He Chevron. What's Kiryat Arba mean? It means that there's many different explanations. Some people say that Arba was actually the name of a giant. And Rashi says it's really about the four couples that are there, Adam and Eve, because Arba means four. And so Kiryat Arba means Adam and Eve, Abraham and Sarah, Isaac and Rebecca, Jacob and Leah. So Vatamat Sarah b'Kiryat Arba, she passed away in Kiryat Arba. He Chevron, it is Chevron, Be'eretz Canaan, in the land of Canaan. Right, Abraham came to eulogize Sarah and to cry for her. Please remember, this is 3,800 years ago. You might think that women weren't treated with such great respect. And yet, not only is he going to bury her, he's going to eulogize her. That means he's going to have a public, show public affection and public praise of Sarah. Sarah Imenu. Vayakam Avraham al pnei meto. So Abraham arose from the face of his dead, but what it really means is that his dead is laid before him, I think. Vayidaber el pnei chet lemo. And he says to the Hittites, which he's seemingly, we're going to learn in a second, living amongst, he says, Ger v'toshav anochi machem. I'm an alien and a resident amongst you. Tnu li achuzat kaveri machem. Let me have a burial plot amongst you. And let me, and therefore I shall bury my dead from before me. And the Hittites answered him, saying, "Shem Eino Adoni." Now, before I translate this, I want to say that our good friend and one of the founders of the Land of Israel Network, Ari Abramowitz, says to me, "Please, Yishai, talk about what you talk about sometimes, which is this is the classic Middle Eastern negotiation happening here. Okay, so let's follow that train of thought. First is that Abraham says, "Let me bury my dead from before me," and the Hittites say, what do they say? Shameinu Adoni. Listen to us, sir. Hear us. Nasi Elohim ata betochenu. You are a prince of God amongst us. Bemifchar kivrenu kvoret metcha. Pick the choice burial plot from amongst us. Ish mimenu et kivro lo yichle mimecha. Right? Mimecha. Mimcha, excuse me. Nobody is going to stop you from burying. Nobody's going to keep their burial plot from you. Mikbo metecha, from you to allow you to bury your dead. Meaning to say, we'll all give you our choice plots. So he could have said, "Hey, thanks," and he could have just been like, "Well, this is what I want." But what he does is that, and this is the Middle Eastern negotiation. Vayakam Avraham, vayishtachu la'am ha'aretz livnei chet. Abraham arose and he bowed down to the Hittites, meaning to say he shows them great honor and respect, and he takes a pause. And we'll see these pauses throughout. These are pauses, honorific pauses. Vayidaber itam le'emor. And he says to them, saying, Im yeshet nafshachem likbor et miti. If indeed it is in your heart or in your soul to bury my dead, milfanai, from before me. Again, there's this refrain that the dead is laying right before Abraham. There's an actual pain. I think I said this in previous years. If you've ever dealt with a dead body, it really is, there's just no peace until it's put back in the ground, the way the halacha tells us. And so Avram continues. He says, Shamoni, you listen, please hear me. Ufigoli, and please, it could mean strike for me, or find me, or kind of shake for me, like find the guy for me, Be'efron ben Tzochar. This guy named Ephron, the son of Tzochar. Now Ephron is the guy's name, and we're going to see in a second that he's the purveyor of the land. Just an important piece of information that I learned from Rabbi Daniel, I think Rabbi Daniel Cohen, is that, from Bat Ayin, is that he says, Shimshon means little son. Nachshon means little snake. The on part is a diminutive. It kind of makes it like you cute little X. Ephron means little earth. And it is as though Abraham is going to be negotiating with the earth itself. So he says to the Hittites, find for me this Ephron. And what? Ve'iten li et marat ha-machpelah, and he shall give to me the double cave, asher lo, which belongs to him, asher bekzeh sadehu, which is at the edge of his field, bekesef male, itnen ali, and he should give it to me, for full money, betochechem, amongst you, la'achuzat kaver, for a burial plot. Not just a burial plot, but it could also mean like a family burial plot. Ve'efron yoshev betoch bnei chet. Now Ephron is sitting amongst the Hittites. Ve'yan Ephron achiti et Avraham. And Ephron the Hittite understood and answered Abraham, be'oznei bnei chet, in the ears of all the other Hittites, l'chol ba'ei sha'ar iro le'emo, to all the people who come into the gate of his city, saying. Let's pause for a second in here on verse 10, which is the gate of his city. Why do I want to pause it? Because I want you to notice that he says, that the Torah says this was the gate of his city. And the Medrash says that day he was appointed a big judge. Because Abraham asked him to purchase something from him, he was given honor. Because this great man Abraham kind of bestowed honor upon him. But I want to say that the word Sha'ar Iro means the gate of his city. He's the controller of this city. He is the boss of this city. One way or another, he is the controller. And I'll show you what I mean when we get eight verses down the line. Remember that I said that that Ephron is the controller of that city. There's a special reason I'm saying that, okay? Let's go on to verse 11. So Ephron says, Lo Adoni, no, sir, Shamaini, you hear me, listen to me. Hasadeh natati lach. I have given you the field. V'hamara asher bo, and the cave that is within it. Lecha netatiha. I have given it to you. Le'einei bnei ami. In the eyes of all of my people. Everybody's going to see that I have given it to you. Netatiha lecha. I have given it to you. Kvor metecha. Okay? Now bury your dead. Meaning to say, Yes, Abraham, you are a great man. I give to you a gift. Please, in front of all these people, I give it to you. Right? This is like a very, there's a lot of honor going on here. Or what we say in Hebrew, kavod. This kavod, right? This kavod, right? So he's doing it in front of all these people. This is what they call a Middle Eastern gesture, the gesture of the Middle East, okay? Now, does Abraham rush into the next sentence? No. Vayishtachu Avraham lifnei am haaretz. Abraham bowed down before the people of the land, before the nation of the land. Now, am haaretz also means, later on, it comes to mean the hoi polloi, you know, the kind of the simpletons. It's Abraham, but he's bowing to the Hittites. But he does that. That's the Middle Eastern way. He bows before the Hittites, before this nation, and then he speaks. And he says, "Veidaber el Efron beoznei am haaretz leemor." He, Abraham, speaks to Ephron in the ears of all the people of this land, the in this case the Hittites, saying, by the way, just parentheses, we have found many Canaanite ruins in the Hebron area. With regard to the Hittites, we think that one of the thoughts is that there was a Hittite kind of enclave living in that part of Hebron, because the Hittites are actually live more northerly of the land of Israel, in the southern Turkey and in the Assyria area, right? But there were enclaves of Hittites. So that could account for why it switches between calling them Hittites and the nation of the land, okay? So he says, Abraham says, "Ach im ata lu shameni." If you indeed want to hear me, if indeed you're like, you're on my side, if your soul is with me, hear me. Natati kesef asadeh. I have given the money for the field. Kach mimeni. Take it from me. Vekbara et miti shama, and I will bury my dead there. What does that mean? I've already given the money of the field. Rashi says it's already set aside, and I wish you would just take it from me. For me, I personally have developed a negotiation strategy, which I've talked about in previous years. How do I negotiate here in the Middle East when I want to buy something for cheaper? One of the things that I do is that, let's say something costs 800 shekel, but I want to pay half, 400 shekel. I sometimes take out the money out of my wallet and put it down on the table and take a step back. Why do I do that? Because the merchant, he can negotiate all day long, but he doesn't know if you really mean it. So he's going to keep the price high because he doesn't know if you're really going to pay anything at all anyway. And he doesn't actually believe that you're going to take out money and purchase it, especially when you're negotiating. But when you take out the money and you're saying, look, before, it's a choice for me, the buyer, to take it or leave it. Now it's a choice for you, the seller. This thing has been sitting on your shelf for months, right? And now somebody's going to give you money for it. It's you who's going to walk away from this money. The money's been set aside. I've already relinquished this money. I've already given it to you in my mind. It's now you are the person who's going to choose not to take that money. And for a merchant, especially of merchandise, that's not a simple proposition. Very likely is that the person will very much want that. I also have a little trick, which is I have another few shekels in my pockets, like a 20 shekel bill or a 50 shekel bill. And if I see that there's too much hemming and hawing, I might sweeten the deal by just a little bit more. I'm giving you all my secrets here, friends. And all I'm asking you for is a little bit of of support of the show at YishaiFleischer.com or thelandofisrael.com or support of the Jewish community of Hebron at HebronFund.org. So it's just that simple. So help me out by and I'm giving you secrets about how to save your money when you're negotiating. And from Abraham, of course. So where were we? What Abraham says to him, I basically set aside the money for this. Just take it. Right? Vayan Ephron et Avraham, and Ephron answered Abraham, saying to him, again, these are all slow and considered gestures. Vayan Ephron et Avraham, vayomer lo. And Ephron, Yan also means he understood and he answered. So he, contemplated and he answered, saying to Abraham the following, thusly, Adoni, sir, Shamaini, listen to me. Eretz arba meot shekel kesef. It's a land worth 400 silver weight. Shekel is not just new Israeli shekels, but a shekel also comes from the mishkal, which is weight. Eretz 400 shekel kesef beini ubeincha mahi. Between me and you, what is it? And today we think we estimated it upwards of $1 million. Says, listen, it's a, you know, it's 400 silver weight between me and you. What is that? Ve'et metcha kvo, and your dead bury. Now, the right thing to do in Middle Eastern negotiation is now to negotiate the price down. But that's not what Abraham does in this case. Vishma Avraham el Ephron. Abraham listened to Ephron. Right? Again, he didn't just do it, but he contemplated, he appreciated, he thought about it, and he, what does he do? Vishkol Avraham le Ephron et hakesef. Abraham weighs the money, or the weight of silver for Ephron. Probably Ephron is looking at the weighing process. Asher diber beoznei b'nechet, which was spoken of in the ears of the Hittites, meaning to say there are witnesses, 400 shekel kesef, 400 silver weight, over la socher. And the translation here is negotiable currency, or in simple words, passing to the seller. 400 silver weight, passing to the seller. Vayakam zdei Ephron asher b'machpelah. After this, it doesn't say after this, I'm just adding, and or therefore, Vayakam zdei Ephron asher b'machpelah, the field of Ephron, which is in the Machpelah, which is asher lifnei Mamre, which is close to or facing Mamre. Today we think it's a mountain right next to the Machpelah called Jabal Nimra. Hasadeh v'hamara, the field and the cave, asher bo, which is within it, v'chol etz asher basadeh, also all the trees that are in the field, asher b'chol gvulo saviv, which is in all the perimeter around. What happened to it? There's a word that I didn't say, which is the first word of the verse, because of the English it gets reversed all the way to the end, which is, what happened to this whole field? V'yakam. It rose up. It got lifted up somehow. What does this mean, lifted up? Because it's connected to the next verse. This is one of these verses that actually one idea is separated by two verses. But in any case, it delineates what? It's the field and the cave, and where is it, and the trees. It rose up and became, next verse, le'Avraham. It was moved, kind of transferred over to Abraham. And Rashi says, like, now it's going from a simple person's ownership to a king's ownership, to Abraham, la Avraham, la mikne, for a purchase, la mikna, for a purchase, la inei b'nei chet, for the, in the eyes of all the Hittites, b'chol b'ei shar, iro, in the, all of people who come into his gate. Verse 18, his gate. Do you remember what I told you at verse 10? I said to you that Ephron, it was his gate. It was Ephron's gate. But guess what? At that time, he was the owner of the Marat HaMachpelah. And therefore, when he was the owner of the Marat HaMachpelah, he was the owner, the controller of the plot of land that controls all of Hebron. Whoever controls the Machpelah controls Hebron. So he said, L'chol ba'eshar iro. That was when all the people that came into the gate of his city, Ephron's, once it got sold, it says that it was b'chol ba'eshar iro for Abraham. Abraham is now the controller of the whole city. Whoever possesses the Machpelah controls the whole city. Whoever possesses the Temple Mount controls all of Jerusalem. Whoever possesses both of these controls the land of Israel. Oh, and I forgot, of course, the third controller, which is the tomb of Joseph, right? Whoever controls the tomb of Joseph controls Shechem. Today it's in the hands of the Philistines, of the Palestinian Authority. Okay? Whoever controls the Temple Mount, well, that's a mixed bag there. The mixed bag, because today it's a kind of joint control of both Arabs on the one hand, the Waqf from Jordan is the controller of who really prays there. But today, the state of Israel controls the kind of what, it's like some kind of joint control situation. So who controls Jerusalem today? It's like some kind of joint control. And who controls Hebron? Well, it's half and half. On the one hand, the Jews really are both the Temple Mount and Hebron, Marat HaMachpelah, really the army, the Israeli army controls it. But there is a strong Muslim presence there that in many ways still has, let's put it this way, a large controlling share. But what we learn here from the Torah in a secret is that whoever controls the Machpelah controls Hebron. Whoever controls the Har HaBayit controls Jerusalem. Whoever the Temple Mount controls Jerusalem. Whoever controls the Tomb of Joseph controls Shechem. And whoever controls these three controls the land of Israel. That is a secret that I'm sharing with you today. Okay, so the purchase has been made. And now let's not forget, there's one other little factor that we have to remember here. In all this, when Abraham is so adroitly negotiating for Maariv Machpelah, remember, there's one more little thing here. Hello, there's Sarah Imenu, right? Sarah, she still needs burial. V'acharechen, after all this. And some people say, you know that there are 10 tests that Abraham had to pass. Some people say the 10th pinnacle test was the test of the binding of Yitzchak. But other opinions say no. The 10th test was the purchase of Maariv HaMachpelah, the purchase of the land of Israel, and the burial of Sarah in this tough moment. Anyway, the Torah says, V'achreichen, afterwards, Kavar Avraham et Sarah, Abraham buried Sarah, Ishto, his wife, El Ma'aratz Dea Machpelah, to the cave in the field of Machpelah, Al Pnei Mamre, which is on the face of Mamre, Hi Chevron Be'eretz Knan, it is Hebron in the land of Canaan. And why would the Torah give us all these details? Nimra, Chevron, Knan, Kiryat Arba, this field. The Torah is triangulating. It is giving you resolution all the way to the littlest pixel that you know exactly where this place is. It's not in Brooklyn, and it's not in Be'er Sheva, and it's not anywhere else. It's in Chevron in this spot, and we, our people, have known it for the last 3,800 years. 3,800 years we've known it. It's this place. Vayakam hasadeh v'hamara sherbo, and the field and the cave that was within it rose up or became Abraham's, l'Avraham, l'achuzat kaver me'at nechet, for an eternal, really, burial plot from the children of the Hittites. Okay, that was Maariv HaMachpelah. And interestingly enough, at the end of the Torah portion, we kind of get another redo of that, which is when Isaac and Ishmael will bury Abraham to that family plot, together with his beloved wife Sarah, two by two. Two by two, they enter into the Maariv HaMachpelah. The Maariv HaMachpelah is also a kind of ark. It's also a kind of ark. Do you see that theme? We talked about the ark of Lot. And the cave, right? And this kind of saving of the world. Well, there is an ark that is protected from the vicissitudes of this world, and that is the tomb of Machpelah. Nobody could touch it. The worst you could do is stop Jews from coming there, but never stopping Jews from connecting there. Even when Islam, when the Mamluks ruled, yes, they kicked the Jews out of the building itself, but they didn't kick us out of the town. That was for a short amount of time, under British mandate. We were kicked out a few other times, usually around Christian times, interestingly enough. We were totally kicked out. But then we came back. We always came back. We are always magnetized to this place. The rest of the Torah portion deals with the fabulous, amazing, incredible story of Rebecca. Now, it happens to be that Rivka is one of my favorite actors in the Torah. And she is incredibly decisive. At every turn that we meet her, you find a woman. Every verse that has something to do with Rebecca is a verse of incredible confidence and sure-footedness. And when in the next Torah portion, next week, when we learn that Rebecca has a doubt about the fighting within her womb, when we learn about Rebecca and the fighting within her womb, even then, when she is in a moment of doubt, and I just said to you that she's always confident, she goes to, it's the Torah says, she will go to demand and study Lidrosh. Remember that word we talked about last week? To demand of God to understand what's going on. She will demand prophecy to understand what's going on, and she will receive it. So even in a moment of doubt, her answer is, I want the answer, and I know what to do, and I will get that answer. Even though inside of her womb will rest, or not rest, will fight a tremendous conflict between two very different brothers, Esav and Yaakov. But in this week's Torah portion, in Chayei Sarah, we're going to learn about the servant and how he goes up to Aram, to Haran, excuse me, to look for the right person for Isaac, and he will ask God, basically saying, "Look, I'm not cut out to figure this out. I'm not a shadchan. I'm not here to. I don't know who's the right person. Please, Hashem, you know, here's the sign that I'm demanding that you follow my sign." And the rabbis say, the sages say, that this was not a proper request, and yet God granted it for the sake of Isaac. And one of my favorite verses in the whole Torah is when they ask this young Rebecca, "Will you go with this servant to a strange land, leave your family, and follow this strange man to marry somebody else? Will you follow him?" And when she's asked of her family, like, "Will you follow this man?" She says one thing. She says, "Elech." She says, "I will go." That's her answer. Okay. And then later on, well, let me just find that verse to you. They say, "Vayomru," and her family said, "Nikra la na'ara v'nish'al et piha." We will call the maiden and ask her mouth, ask her to her opinion. Vayikru Rivka, they called Rivka. Vayomru eleha, they said to her, "Hatilchi imaisha zeh?" Will you go with this man? The answer is no, right? This is weird. Leave your house, go with a weird man to marry somebody you never heard of. "Hatilchi imaisha zeh?" Vatomer elech. That's it. She said, "I'll go." That's her answer. Not hemming and hawing, not considering, not thinking. Remember the hemming and hawing and thinking and all the considerations with Ephron and Avraham here. They said, "Will you go?" She says, "Yep, I'm out. Me out. Mic drop. Rebecca's out. Rivka's out of Haran and going towards a new life, towards Yitzchak." She's a great prophetess. Remember that. Remember that. She's a great prophetess. And she knows where she's going. And then she's going to ride her camels. I have so many more beautiful things to talk about this Torah portion because it's just so beautiful. I got emotional a second ago just thinking that tomorrow, that on Shabbat in the morning, I'm going to get to hear this Torah portion read at the Marat HaMachpelah. It's really the coming together of the beautiful text, the incredible, never-ending truth of the Torah, the eternal Torah, happening in this eternal place. It just comes together. It's really an incredible thing. And I really want to invite you next year to join us. And you can join us by just signing up at the HebronFund.org. It's an incredible thing. But maybe we'll finish off with just one more thought. She sees Isaac from afar. And it says Vatipol me'al hagamal. She falls from the camel, just kind of like knocked out by that energy of seeing from a distance Isaac. But I think what it could also mean is Vatipol, from the word Litit Palel. She prayed from the top of the camel. The minute she saw him, they were like, oh gosh, what is that when you hit like two tuning forks at the same time? There's like resonance. Is that it? Resonance. They are resonant, Isaac and Rebecca. And she begins to pray, just like as he's praying in the field. And that's what it says. It says that Isaac is praying in the field. It says, "Ve'itze l'suach basadeh." He went to speak in the field, to supplicate in the field. Yes, that's what Isaac does. He supplicates, and he's the inventor, or the discoverer, really. I like that term more. Of praying in the afternoon, the mincha prayer, the afternoon prayer. And he raises up his eyes and he sees camels coming at a distance. The romance of these visuals is just unbelievable, especially for the Torah, which is, you know, not always going to be, you know, like some kind of big romantic document. And yet this is the Torah portion of romance, bar none, number one. And comes the servant to Isaac, Vayisaper ha'eved liYitzchak et kol ha'dvarim asher asah. He tells him the whole story about how he got Rivka. Vayaviha Yitzchak ha'ohel ha'sara, and Yitzchak brings her into the tent of Sarah, his mother. Notice that at the first part of this phrase, Rebecca's name is not mentioned because it's actually about Sarah. Isaac brings the girl into the tent of Sarah, his mother. wow, like, again, like the detail of Sarah, his mother. We know it's his mom, but the Torah says his mother, his beloved mother. That's what it means. Vayikach et Rivka, he takes Rivka, v'tehi lo le'isha, and she became like a wife to him. She became a wife to him, right? I mean, it's say he brought her into the tent of Sarah, and maybe there's a missing word there, which she was accepted. Vayikach et Rivka, and he took Rivka. So he brought her into the tent, and there's like some kind of approbation in the tent of Sarah. Vayikach et Rivka, and he takes Rivka, v'tehi lo le'isha, she became to him a wife. Look at this word, folks. Buckle in. Vayeh and he loved her. And Isaac was consoled after his mother. Notice, this time it doesn't say Sarah. Sarah's name is now gone at the latter part of the phrase because it's not about Sarah anymore, it's about Rivka. He loved her and he was consoled. Finally, we're going to learn about the burial of Abraham. And the Torah will tell us yet again where he was buried and the purchase. It's going to retell it. And I'm going to talk about this later on in Parshat Vayechi, which is that the Torah teaches us one thing about Marat Machpelah. Tell that story over and over. That's what the Torah teaches us. And finally, we're going to learn about Ishmael and where he dwelt. And basically that he gets here an epitaph. And basically he's the kind of end of this Torah portion, but it's basically to tell you, but he's not the chosen son. That's the message. Ishmael is beloved and blessed, but not the chosen son to continue the Abrahamic tradition, the Abrahamic faith, the true Abrahamic faith. All right, folks, you are listening to the Yishai Fleischer Show here in the land of Israel. Thank you so much for joining me on this important Shabbat. And I really hope, here's my prayer, that you, wherever you are, will also feel the feelings about the mothers and the fathers, will also feel the feelings of that great romance that was a family that gave birth to a nation. And I want us also to understand the importance of the purchase of the first plot of land in the land of Israel for an eternal inheritance for our people. And I also want to tell you that I'm so excited to be there in Hebron for Shabbat, and I really hope that you print out a picture of Marat HaMachpelah and show it in shul. Send it, give it to the kids when there's Torah reading. Print out a picture of Marat HaMachpelah, and I'm going to email out as well. Like, look at it, see it, and make it like, yes, that's the place. That's the place on the map. That's the place where Abraham, Sarah, Isaac, and Rebekah, Jacob, and Leah, and Adam and Eve are buried. Finally, I want to say to you that I will be flying out Saturday night, which is yet another crazy weight that I put upon myself, which is to fly out Saturday night to go to the United States. I'll be in New York for Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. I will be at the ZOA dinner. I will be at the One Israel Fund dinner. These are great organizations that are supporting a strength in the land of Israel. I am looking forward to seeing maybe some of you there. If you're going to that, let me know. Write me an email, yishai@thelandofisrael.com. And then on Thursday morning, I'm flying out to Toronto, and I'm going to the Limud conference there. So it's going to be certainly a big adventure, and I'm going to be on the road again. I can't wait to get on the road again, seeing places that I've never seen before, okay? But all those places that I'm going to is for the land of Israel and for the Torah of Israel, for the God of Israel, for the people of Israel, for this incredible story that some people are trying to drown, but we will never let them. Okay, folks, stay tuned. I'm going to see if I can get Malka Fleischer to come talk on for just 5 minutes. She's also crazy busy getting ready for Chai Sarah. But God bless you. Stay tuned. Stay connected. Stay part of the story wherever you are. And shalom.
Ours is an almost biblical generation of suffering and courage, said Menachem Begin. Ours is a generation of destruction and redemption. Ours is the generation that rose up from the bottomless pit of hell. Well, history didn't place me in that generation, but God gave me the gift of telling their tale, because I'm Rav Mike Foyer, and this is The Jewish Story.
Listen to The Jewish Story with Rav Mike Foyer on thelandofisrael.com.
All right, folks, I'm already in Hebron. I'm getting ready for Parshat Chayei Sarah. 35,000 people are coming, 10 Knesset members at least, people from France, people from America, people from Russia, people from all over the world. And one of the major places that they're going to be eating is actually, of course, would you doubt it, at Chabad of Hebron. Chabad of Hebron, run by Rabbi Danny Cohen, is an incredible organization that deals with the soldiers, barbecues with the soldiers, gives them out, you know, things in order to connect them. So you have all these soldiers in the city of Hebron because they're protecting us here in this area that's not police protected but army protected. And so Chabad Hebron uses that opportunity to get these people a lot closer. Now, one of the things that's been happening, this is the third year in a row, is a giant, ginormous, gigantic tent, which last year housed about 3,500 people. This year, 5,000 people. This is an incredible expense. We're talking about three full meals. We're talking about chandeliers, and we're talking about at a very like minimal cost, almost what do we call it, seemly cost, just a cost to just keep people serious. And it's an incredible thing, and it's really also showing that the pilgrimage to Hebron is not just it's a national pilgrimage that people and donors and people around the world understand the importance of. Okay, Rabbi Danny Cohen, tell me a little bit about the effort. This is a new effort. It's a three-year-old effort, basically, with these giant tents. Is it worth it? Is it worth the headache, the time, the money, all the issues? Why are you doing this giant tent thing?
All right. So truthfully, obviously, it's definitely worth it. Like, if I would be a multi-millionaire, this is definitely something that I would invest my money on. But I can't say this is something that we planned in our budget. And I'll just tell you shortly that just 3 years ago, I kind of got a call from a fellow shaliach that told me that he has a friend that is interested, that, you know, he wants to do something in Hebron that will put us on the map, and you know, around involving Chayei Sarah. And he said, you know, what could we do to host the people? And we kind of sent in a very a large number of a budget of kind of proposing that people, anybody that comes will register and he'll have a kind of a buffet-style meal and just, you know, a simple thing. He said, no, we want to make this fit for Avraham and Sarah's children and that they should feel that they're hosted mamash by Avraham Avinu. He wanted that everybody should feel that that basically that the Lubavitcher Rebbe is hosting them. And how would he host them? Just giving them a buffet meal. So it's really an amazing thing just to see this tent and production, I think, anywhere in the world. But when it's done in downtown Hebron, in a place where it's not easy, the whole infrastructure and the electricity and the plumbing and just every little detail here is much more complicated, but it's an amazing thing. We're going to have close to 5,000 people sitting down, three meals, fancy, real dishes, chandeliers.
Waiters,
everything.
Right, and also the tent itself is very beautiful. It's got those chandeliers. It's got also pictures of the Lubavitcher Rebbe around. Yes. So you really are hosted by Avram and Sarah, Avinu and Imenu, and also by the Lubavitcher Rebbe. Also, I think maybe the Uman phenomenon, yes, may have contributed a little bit to this thing.
100%. That was the words that I heard in that conversation 3 years ago. We always have this for many years, that we have to do this. You know, if Rabbi Nachman of Breslov deserves this, then obviously Avram, Sarah, Yitzchak, Leah, Yaakov, and Rivka, Yitzchak and Rivka, and Yaakov and Leah definitely deserve that. And I think that here it's also a statement. You know, many times people come to Hebron and they, you know, obviously you cannot not be swept away from the, you know, the history, the significance, the inspiration, but kind of many times people walk away and, you know, it looks like we're here on a temporarily basis, you know. But unfortunately, the political situation, all that prevents us from developing certain areas. But, you know, when there's such a fancy tent that really would fit a, you know, on Sunday I'm going to be joining the thousands of shluchim in the end of the shluchim convention that takes place every year around this time. And we're going to sit with 5,000 people in a hall. And the way this tent looks, it doesn't look too far from that, you know, in terms of how fancy it is. So it really gives Hebron not only feeding thousands of people, but also giving us that sense of that we're here to stay, we're here in a beautiful way. And Baruch Hashem, l'chaim.
Speaking of here to stay, the defense minister just tweeted out today that not only is he helping push forward the 31 new apartments in the Chizkiya Quarter Chabad complex, Chabad neighborhood, in here in Hebron. This is part of the land that's owned by the Lubavitcher Rebbe. He's also allowing more building here, or at least there's the initial green light to the building right here where we're standing in the old Jordanian Market building, which is on Jewish property. So more good news, and actually, what I think is important to understand is that the tent that you're creating and the 35,000 people that are coming also have political weight. That political weight translates into the defense minister not only understanding that it's the right thing to do, but it's important for him and his seat to continue to build Hebron.
100%. We pray and hope. You know, Hebron unfortunately has seen too many times, you know, declarations and of goodwill. So we're really confident and hope and pray that this time, you know, all these promises are going to go through, and that's the way it looks like. I want to add just one thing about that tent, that when we first did this 3 years ago, so on Erev Shabbos, I got a call from my friend and neighbor, Dr. Gershon Bar Kochva, one of the people that really his life is dedicated for research of the Maarat HaMachpelah and Hebron. And he called me up all excited. He said, listen, I know you have no time now. It's like a few hours before Shabbos and Chayasara, but I'm emailing you this research that was done by a professor a few years ago regarding Hebron. And he said, you know, check up. I earmarked a certain page and look over there. And there I open up, and it's a study that was done, forgive me, I don't remember the name, by someone that a professor that basically claims that according to all the, if you take all the the psukim from the Torah, the archaeological findings, the geography, the whatever parameters that these researchers use, he says that the only place that it makes sense to say that that was the location of Avram Avinu's tent is exactly in that parking lot that we're converting into the tent. So I think it's beautiful. We're making sure that Avram Avinu and Sarah is not something that's written, you know, we read as a history book, but something that is alive and kicking. Am Yisrael Chai.
Rabbi Danny Cohen, Chabad of Hebron, Mazal Tov and Yasher Koach. Okay, folks, back here on the Yishai Fleischer Show. I've got like 2 minutes to talk with Malka here. Malka, we're in Hebron already. We're in a bar mitzvah of our very good friends, Alex and Sippy Treyman. Their amazing son, Mordechai, are really some of our oldest friends who were at our wedding here in Hebron. And I just want to say that there's no way that I could do a show about, I've talked about everything about Maarat HaMachpelah, I've talked about Avraham Avinu, I've talked about the tent. How can I talk about everything else when I can't talk about the most important thing that ever happened here in Hebron for me, which is marrying you, okay, here in Maarat HaMachpelah 2002, height of the Second Intifada, and Baruch Hashem, I'm standing here with you, happily married for the last 15 years, Baruch Hashem, 16?
16.
I knew it. Just joking, everybody, just joking, that was a prepared pun. In any case, Malka Fleischer, thanks so much for being here. Are you excited for Chayasara?
I'm totally excited for Chayasara. It's the happiest time of the year for Hebron. I mean, Hebron definitely has a lot of fun. We have Pesach fun, we have Sukkot fun, and then there's just the regular everyday fun. There's actually a lot of tourists that come in and out of Hebron. But the truth is that Chaye Sara is like the cherry on top.
Yeah.
When thousands and thousands and thousands of people come and they take part all together in a beautiful Shabbat. And some people are in tents, and some people are on living room floors. There was one time where we went to David Wilder's house, the former spokesperson for Hebron, and his entire floor was like a Tetris of little flat mattresses. And just the whole, he like opened up his entire living room to just people, and they just like plunked down on the floor with their backpack and with their, like, wearing their regular clothes. And it was just a great time, and there's meals, and there's a great atmosphere. The soldiers get a lot of support, I feel like. People come and they tell them kol hakavod, you know, way to go, and give them, we hand out little snacks and things like that. And it's just it's a wonderful time. I hope we'll have good weather.
Absolutely, Malka. And you and I slept in tents many times. I really want to just for 1 second touch upon the fact that our American brothers and sisters went through a horrible tragedy this last week. And not a tragedy, I don't like to use that word. I like to use a heinous crime.
Absolutely. It was horrific. And the people here in Israel definitely noticed, meaning to say, like, sometimes it feels that we're so disconnected that you know, in America they don't care about what goes on in Israel, and in Israel they don't care about what goes on in America, but not at all. The murder in Pittsburgh took the attention of the entire country, and faces were long that day, and I don't know. We're here for you. We're here for you, American brothers and sisters.
Right. There was American brothers and sisters. There was also a horrible car accident here in Israel where a whole family was decimated. It was very tough stuff. But at the same time, Am Yisrael is still alive. Am Yisrael Chai. And we're the children of Abraham and Sarah. And we're here this Shabbat together. I want to thank you so much. I want to thank you for 16 years of wonderful marriage and for making me a better person. I know that doesn't seem such an easy task. And maybe not a successful one.
No, it seems easy.
Yes.
Seems like an easy task.
Anyway, mazel tov to the Tremans, mazel tov to the Fleishers for getting married.
Thank you. You know, Ishai, you're the person who brought me to Hebron for the first time. I had never been to Hebron, and I had no real awareness of Hebron, I guess, until you said you wanted to get married here. And thanks to you. I mean, thanks to God and the Jewish people, I have a connection to Hebron. But thanks to you, you really opened the door for me. So I hope we have a great Shabbat together. And I hope all the Jewish people have as wonderful time in Hebron as we do.
Amen. And I hope to introduce you to the Beit HaMikdash next. That's the next one.
Yes, bring me there.
Folks, I want to thank you so much for being with me. Next week, I'm in New York and in Toronto. Write me an email, yishai@thelandofisrael.com, if you're there and you want to see me, or if you want to do something fun. In any case, God bless you, folks, wherever you are. Stay tuned, stay connected, stay part of the story. And remember, Chaye Sarah, the life of Sarah here in Hebron, you are part of it. When you say to the world, we are from this land, our parents are sleeping in this land, they're buried in this land, and we're going to be reborn in this land. Thanks so much for being with us, and shalom.
Shabbat shalom.
Josh Haston here, host of Israel Uncensored on the Land of Israel Radio Network at thelandofisrael.com. Make sure you check out my show every Monday, bringing you the news unfiltered and uncensored, information that you are not getting anywhere else, especially not in the mainstream media.
Israel Uncensored with Josh Haston on the Land of Israel Network at thelandofisrael.com.